This is Herb Montgomery with Renewed Heart Ministries, and we welcome you to this week's weekly podcast. Our feature text this week is Matthew 26, verse 28, where Jesus says, "For this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins." Now, what I want you to consider this week is, what did Jesus mean when he told his disciples that his blood was being poured out for the forgiveness of sins? And in order to answer this correctly, we can't answer it from our perspective today. We have to look at it from the perspective of those who were the original audience for whom these words were intended. To a first century Jew who was longing to be free from Roman oppression, the phrase forgiveness of sins, it didn't mean that God would forgive their moral infractions and let them into heaven when they died. Forgiveness of sins within a Jewish context, especially the context that Jesus uses this phrase in, it meant that their time of captivity to foreign powers, and most presently Rome's presence in Jerusalem, would be reversed and the hope of Israel would be restored. That which got Israel into this mess would be forgiven and Israel would be liberated. And the unjust crucifixion of Jesus, which Jesus is referring to when he talks about his blood being poured out, and the reversing of that unjust crucifixion, the undoing of that crucifixion by God through the resurrection, according to Jesus, was not to produce changes in God toward us, but instead it was to produce a radical change, if we take it literally, if it was going to create the restoration of Israel and the liberation of Israel from foreign power, it would create a radical change both within the Roman Empire and the Jewish nation that would lead to a radical redistribution of how life in the first century was arranged. Much is missed, I think, when we don't recognize the characters that are in this story and who their modern day equivalents are. And remember, Rome was the superpower of the day, and Jerusalem was a region that resented Rome's presence or Rome's occupation. And there were even radical fundamentalist Jews who thought the only way for Jewish voices to be heard by Rome was through barbarically violent militaristic terrorism on their part. And those who subscribed to these methods against Rome were called the Zealots. What Jesus was demonstrating through the cross, and what God was endorsing, I believe, through the resurrection, was that the way to heal the world was not for the Jewish people to use barbaric violence to bring about Israel's liberation and restoration. Instead, it was through forgiveness and love for their Roman enemies, and a desire to awaken in the hearts of the Romans compassion, and win the Romans through non-violent direct action coupled with this unconditional enemy love, having their own blood shed, in other words, rather than staining their hands with the blood of others. Now let's back up and see if we can plug in this week some modern day equivalents. Rome was the then present superpower of the Jesus story of the first century. Zealots were the fundamentalist Jews who were using barbarically violent methods to try and remove Roman presence from Jerusalem. And what does the Jesus story say to us if we place America in the place of Rome and ISIS in the place of the fundamentalist Jewish zealots of the first century? ISIS is a barbarically violent, militant, fundamentalist sect, much like the Jewish zealots were of Jesus's day. ISIS feels just like the zealots that the only way to throw off the presence of a foreign power is through terrorist means. This is exactly how the zealots felt towards Rome in regards to Jerusalem. And it was these zealots, especially that Jesus would plead with, to use nonviolent enemy love as their means of arriving at the social changes that they desired. Because if they would continue on the path, if the zealots, Jesus warned them, if they continued on the path of using their present methods, Jesus warned repeatedly that Rome would, being much stronger than the zealots, would respond, and it would end in Gehenna. In other words, Jerusalem being destroyed by Rome, obliterated by Rome. And we see that happening in AD 70 at the end of the 3-year Jewish and Roman war from AD 66 to AD 70 or 69. Just as the Jewish nation resented Roman occupation and felt oppressed by Rome's presence, today those who belong to ISIS, they resent and they feel oppressed by America's presence in their region as well. And what this requires of a Jesus follower is first not to look at the present situation as an American, but as a Jesus follower. And as a Jesus follower, we're not to give in to fear or scapegoating, as we've covered in other podcasts, but rather compassion. Even for those who many deem as evil and beyond redemption, we're to try and first understand what would make the members of ISIS feel that the only way to remove the presence of the West in their region is through such barbaric violence. We must first and foremost look at the situation from the perspective of someone who's being oppressed. ISIS, in other words, is not the enemy. Matter of fact, labeling someone as the enemy, drawing a hard line in the sand that acts as a demarcation between us versus them, that's the very first step away from the path that follows Jesus. So let's first ask the question, what would Jesus say to ISIS today? And I believe it's the same thing Jesus would say to the Jewish zealots of his day in the Jesus story. Jesus would say to those who feel oppressed by the West's presence in their region to choose the way of nonviolent direct action coupled with enemy love and the power of truth to overthrow injustice, violence, and oppression rather than simply responding with greater violence. And if they did not heed this call to nonviolent means, if ISIS did not heed this call to use nonviolence as the means of change, the only end in sight that Jesus would be able to warn them of was of their own Gehenna at the hands of the Roman equivalent, which would be America. And Jesus' call to ISIS would be to seek to liberate themselves from Western occupation through a cross rather than a sword. And there are others who have been oppressed who have discovered Jesus' way of peace as well. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. writes of Gandhi, King says that Gandhi was probably the first person in history to lift the love ethic of Jesus above mere interaction between individuals to a powerful and effective social force on a large scale. Love for Gandhi was a potent instrument for social and collective transformation. It was in this Gandhian emphasis on love and nonviolence that I discovered the method for social reform that I had been seeking. And remember, Gandhi, in using methods learned from Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, he successfully removed Britain's presence and occupation from India. King picked up on these same methods and changed the face of the civil rights movement in his generation in America. So Jesus would first say to ISIS that there's a better way and to warn them of what the superpower that they're going up against will end up doing to them if they reject this better way. But here's my question. I don't believe that ISIS is the only one that Jesus would be speaking to. As a citizen of the modern Rome, the USA, whose foreign presence in a modern Jerusalem like the Middle East is being resented by those who call that region their home, what is Jesus also saying, not just to ISIS, but also to the West? And we can't miss this. I believe that Jesus would say to America that what he would have said to Rome in the first century. Number one, don't use violence to protect your position of privilege and oppression. Using ISIS and ISIS's barbaric violence to justify a greater presence and a greater show of force in a region that possesses resources that you may want to control, it may be good for Western economy, but it's not just towards those for whom this region once again is their home. It's a contemporary form of colonialism disguised at best. And if we think that ISIS is the enemy who cannot be reasoned with, and that leave us no other option than to crush out of existence, we are no different than Rome and how she viewed militant fundamentalist Jews of the first century. And number two, Jesus would say to the West, don't use nonviolence either to protect your position of privilege and oppression. Jesus is not telling America to use nonviolence to defeat ISIS. Jesus is telling America to relinquish her grip on her position at the top of a political pyramid as a superpower, to co-opt the cross, the nonviolent action of Jesus, using Jesus's methods to defeat ISIS and gain control of a region that doesn't belong to you, is a gross misapplication of what Jesus would say to Rome. Jesus would call ISIS, yes, to use nonviolence as he did with the Jewish fundamentalist zealots, but Jesus would call America, which is the modern Rome, to abandon the power to kill and to choose the power of compassion, putting yourself in the shoes of those who oppose you and asking yourself if they have good reason to oppose you. Nonviolent direct action, or NVDA as some people refer to it, by America won't work as long as NVDA is merely a tactic used for an ultimate goal that is to establish greater American presence and oppression in a part of the world that's only desired out of a felt need to control resources that are native to that region. Again, a region that others are calling their home. America really doesn't care about spreading justice and democracy in areas where there are no oil fields or other American interests, where those things don't exist. And number three, Jesus would say to the West, don't scapegoat ISIS as the enemy, as Rome did with the militant Jews of Jerusalem in the first century to Rome's citizens. He would say to reject fear and choose compassion. Choose to see the humanity of those who feel that participation with ISIS is the only option they have at their disposal to have their voices heard by the West. Start by providing a space for those voices, as well as their concerns, to actually be listened to. Make it easier for the members of ISIS to believe that the way of nonviolence might actually work by taking the initiative to demonstratively listen and respectfully respond to concerns of their feeling oppressed by the West presence in their home. And even if this costs the West its control of commodities that the West covets as precious, these commodities really belong to them. And Jesus is calling the West to treat others the way that the West would like to be treated if someone stormed into the West's homeland seeking to instill their favorite form of government through violent means for what could be ulterior motives. And again, we must look at these events first and foremost, not as Americans who blindly feel that America can do no wrong. We have to look at the present events through the lens of the Jesus story itself, and as followers of this Jesus himself, who calls us to be makers of peace. As a follower of Jesus, we are called not to side with the kingdom of this world in crushing a threat to that empire's safety, nor are we to side with a group that uses barbaric violence. We're to be ministers of reconciliation, calling on ISIS not to resort to barbaric violence, but to believe that there's a better way, while calling on the West as well to relinquish the pyramid of privilege and oppression, and not to make ISIS feel like the only way they can be heard is through using such barbaric violence. As a Jesus follower, you're not pro-America and you're not pro-ISIS. You are pro-peace, and you're a follower of the Prince of Peace. And within the pyramid of privilege and oppression, which we've discussed so many times in previous podcasts, we are to call those at the top of these pyramids to dismantle the entire pyramid for a better way. And we're to stand in solidarity with those who are being oppressed at the bottom of the pyramid, honoring their hunger and their thirst for justice, while pleading with them not to choose barbaric violence, but to choose a better way as well. And this doesn't justify ISIS's use of barbaric violence. No doubt that is horrifically evil. But this doesn't justify America either. It refuses to take a side, calling on both sides to follow Jesus. We place ourselves in the shoes of those who feel oppressed, pausing to reflect on what it must be like for them to feel like they're standing against the biggest bully on the planet, and not being able to believe, just like the zealots couldn't believe in Jesus' day, that if they use nonviolent means that they'll actually be heard by the West. Jesus' call to ISIS is, no doubt, lay down the sword. But Jesus' call to the West is also to relinquish your place as the biggest bully on the top of the hill, and to stop and to listen and to give hope to ISIS that they don't have to use barbaric violence to be heard. Jesus' call to his followers is not to allow fear to rob you of compassion. And above all, Jesus is calling to all three parties, don't just rush to violent means of solving conflict between those who feel oppressed and those in the position of privilege and oppression. Jesus calls to all to see both the West and the members of ISIS, remember, as not an us versus them, but as siblings of the same divine parents. God loves all. Jesus died and was resurrected for all. We are all siblings of the same divine parents, and we're going to have to all of us learn how to sit around the same family dinner table eventually once again. And will this come without losses? No, not at all. There will be many losses, I think, on both sides. There will be losses on ISIS's side if they choose to use nonviolent direct action to awaken compassion in the hearts of those in the West, hoping that they will listen. And there will be losses on the West side if those in the West choose to listen and begin treating those in the Middle East the way that they would like to be treated if the roles were reversed. It's time for humanity to let go of fear of scarcity and of addiction to monopolizing positions at the top of pyramids. And it's time for humanity to embrace abundance, enough for everyone's need, but as Gandhi said, not everyone's greed. Cooperating and sharing rather than anxiety and competition and violence. Jesus is calling. There is reported a conversation that is said to have taken place between Lord Irwin and Gandhi, where Lord Irwin asked Gandhi what Gandhi thought would solve the problems between Great Britain and India. And the story states that Gandhi reached over, picked up a Bible from off the desk, and opened it up to the Gospel of Matthew chapter 5, the beginning of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. And Gandhi said, "When your country and mine shall get together on the teachings laid down by Christ in this Sermon on the Mount, we shall have solved the problems not only of our countries, but of those of the whole world." There's only one savior of the world this week, and it's not America with her military might. It's the nonviolent Jesus. Heart group application. This week, I'm not going to ask you to be contemplating any passage from the Gospels. I'm instead going to be asking you every day for a week to pray for both ISIS and for America, that both will choose to follow Jesus instead of the course that they are presently on, that this world would be healed as Jesus promised in John 3:17, and that what will be enlarged through all of this will be Jesus's kingdom rather than simply just yet another of this world's empires. And number two, journal what Jesus shares with you about ISIS and the West as you pray. And number three, share whatever Jesus shares with you this week with your upcoming heart group. And wherever this finds you this week, choose love, not fear. Choose compassion rather than violence, until the only world that remains is a world where Christ's love reigns. I love each and every one of you, and remember, God does too. I'll see you next week. Thank you.